Hello, friends, and welcome again to another episode of Potluck Podcast. I'm Jared Cornutt, joined by my honorable co-host, J.R. Parks, and the Reverend Alan Murray. Guys, how was your week going this week?
Doing well. Been crazy busy with garden stuff this week. Canned a whole bunch of tomatoes and a whole bunch of green beans, and it's been a good, productive week. Busy at work as well. How about y'all?
Been having a good week. Been a very busy and productive week. Been able to spend a little bit of time at the coast the past couple days. I live within an hour of the coast, but was able to be there yesterday evening and this evening. And so anytime you get to be near the coast and watch the sunset over the water is always a blessed day to enjoy God's common grace.
That is most excellent to hear, my guys. Things are starting to – we're actually a little bit cooler in Texas, so that's going to be enjoyable. And my son is having his fourth birthday party Saturday, and I'm just reminded again that I don't like children's birthday parties that much, including my own – like, I love my child – but planning a child's birthday party and all the stuff you got to buy, it's like, it's not for me. But I'm happy to celebrate Andrew and his birthday, but looking forward to Sunday and preaching. I'll put it that way. Well, guys, there is some news in the Baptist world that is hard for even us to ignore that we got to talk about tonight. And that would be the resignation of Jerry Falwell Jr., who has been, I think, for the better part of the past 7 years, I think, 7 or 8 years, the president, maybe longer, maybe it was 13 years, for the president of Liberty Baptist University. He has really taken it to new heights. Liberty Baptist, it's just Liberty University. They have over 100,000 online, or students, most of those online, under Jerry's leadership. But you'll remember back in 2016, 17, I think news came out that Michael Cohen, during the Trump campaign, took care of some illicit photos for the Falwell family, and we never really knew what those were for the longest time. But news slowly started leaking out this week with some of Jerry's missteps this summer, that him and his wife were allegedly involved in a sexual relationship with a pool boy from Miami, and he offered his resignation, and then he rescinded his resignation, and he worked himself a pretty sweet deal that we'll talk about, and now he is no longer the president of the largest Christian university in the world. So, you know, what's your guys' takes on this? I know we've had some pretty strong opinions that we really haven't talked about on here, but we've talked about privately, but now is the time to talk about it.
First off, Liberty, my understanding is Liberty was no longer the largest Christian university. As of, I think it was last year, they stopped using that moniker. I think Grand Canyon University overtook them for that. But there's been a lot of stuff going around online, particularly from folks, mostly Liberty graduates and similar, who wanted Jerry Jr. gone. There's been a lot of stuff going around online for several years. And this week, a lot of that went really public. On Monday, you know, Sunday night, he offered a statement. It was a weird statement that, you know, it just said his wife had an affair like 8 years ago, but clarified that he wasn't involved, which seemed like an odd thing to say. And the whole thing was kind of weird because it was a lot of seemed to be a lot of him blaming other people for his actions over the last number of years. So it was very, very weird, and a lot of those questions about why it was worded the way it was and everything seemingly were answered on Monday when the news article went live, kind of detailing the claims that the other individual involved in this situation were making, and with reporters saying that they have seen the emails and some of the FaceTime conversations and that involved this individual and Jerry and his wife Becky. Really, really disturbing stuff. I don't think we need to really get into the details there, but it's been a weird week. Like you said, he it was announced that he was resigning, and then he that night he came out and said, no, I'm not resigning. And then by the next morning he had said, yes, I am resigning. So it's been just kind of up and down, back and forth. We were looking at Baptist Press and similar agencies before recording this, and there's a lot of conversation around this, and a lot of conversation around this outside of the Baptist world as well.
Yeah, it's been a major source of news, and I think so much of it is just due to the fact that it's liberty, and it's been, you know, the major Christian university as far as representing evangelicalism, for better or for worse. You know, it's not surprising to see that the media has caught on to it. I was eating supper tonight, not watching the TV in the restaurant that I was at, but whatever news channel was on, I think it was Fox, showed, you know, Falwell Jr. resigns, NPR articles, even local news stations have shared about it as well. And it's been disheartening for a number of years seeing some of the leadership coming from Falwell Jr. and his involvement with politics and, you know, just doing things that would have gotten students at Liberty kicked out. You know, the leadership doing one thing and expecting another. It's been bad for the church. It's been bad for the name of Christ, Christianity, evangelicalism as a whole, as a school, and he has been a representative of it. Again, for better, for worse, right or wrong, that's just the way things are. And so, you know, I'm so torn. You know, I'm almost relieved for Liberty that they're going to be able to get some new leadership, and I hope some good leadership, but I hate that it's had to come about like this. I've got lots of friends in ministry and folks who aren't in ministry who have gone to Liberty for a number of degrees, most of them ministry, some of them counseling. I before I knew Southeastern had an undergraduate program, my plan was to go out of high school and go to Liberty on campus in Lynchburg. And it's just sad. Sin makes us do stupid stuff. And I think this is another one of those instances as well. And it'll take a long time for the name of Liberty to recover from this. You know, the face of Liberty from the time of Jerry Sr. to Jerry Jr. has changed tremendously. The school has, you know, grown tremendously. I remember going to Liberty as a teenager to camp on campus, and then a couple years ago I rode through Lynchburg to do some fishing in the mountains of Virginia and was just blown away at how much campus had grown and how much property they have, and a lot of that's tied to Jerry Jr. and things like that. But I hope this is a good second chance and an opportunity to realign and reorientate themselves towards being a Christian institution, not just in name, but in name and practice.
So what do you guys think about the Board of Trustees? I've seen some people saying that they need to step down because all this happens. We're not going to go into the details. You can read plenty of articles on the internet. If you don't know, I'm sure everybody listening does know. But at the end of the day, Jerry resigns and he doesn't resign. So they work out this deal and he resigns, but they work out a severance package where he'll be paid $2.5 million over the next 2 years. And then after the 2 years, he'll receive an $8 million retirement, which is just a ludicrous amount of money. One for a university president to make. I don't think most university presidents make that much money. And I know Liberty is highly successful and has a lot of money, probably very flush with cash. They got successful athletic programs and things like that. But Jerry goes on to say, you know, he goes, they were very gracious to me. They did acknowledge that I didn't do anything wrong to breach the contract. That's why I'm getting the severance. And I was bored with it anyways. I'm looking forward to doing something else. So he's totally nonchalant. He's still denying the accusations, though I've heard audio of one of the phone calls that was alleged that's been proved, and independent websites have verified photos that were alleged as well. And so this is very problematic. Liberty University is giving him $10.5 million to just go away. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I mean, the money is concerning. Maybe more concerning to me as far as going forward is the fact that this board, so this did not come out of the blue. His behavior has not been very befitting of the president of a large Christian university for some time. Think of the statements he made to David Platt on Twitter and similar types of when people called him on that, him arguing that it's okay if he can say terrible things to a pastor because he's not a pastor, he's a lawyer who's president of a university. Like his behavior has been problematic for some time, and the board didn't do anything, ask him to step down, for years as this behavior went on. So yeah, the money is concerning, but also just in looking at the future of Liberty, the fact that you still got a board of trustees who allowed this kind of behavior from the president of one of the largest Christian universities to go on for years, basically unchecked, is concerning for what it may mean for the future of Liberty if those individuals stay in those roles.
Yeah, I don't, I don't know anything about their board. And most of what I know, about Liberty would be, from the top and just experience of people. I've got friends who have been there and attended there recently, and some even further back than that. This might be way too reductionistic, but I think it's a hot mess, and I don't think it's anywhere close to being done, anything close to being over. Maybe it's easier just to pay some money and try to get it over quickly. I don't know. But it's just a mess. And like I said before, it's going to take years and decades. And inevitably, this is going to be a stain that's just going to stick with the school for a long time. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think you're right that it is going to be a problem for Liberty for years to come. It's going to be a problem. I mean, I've been telling people for years, you don't need to send your kids to Liberty. People come to me when I was a student ministry, hey, my kids come at Liberty, what do you think? I say, stay away. I'm sure there's fine people at Liberty, fine students, fine faculty, but at the end of the day, the leadership is problematic and the culture's not going to be good. And I think you're right, Alan. I think more is going to come out and it's just going to get uglier. And kind of honestly, it makes me sick that he's walking away with $10.5 million. But that's not my decision to make at the end of the day. Hopefully new change will come to Liberty. Maybe they'll get out of the family business. I hope they will hire an academic in the presidency, but we'll see. JR?
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting test of whatever leadership is left at Liberty when this is all said and done, because they've never really had to go out and find a president. Obviously, Falwell Sr. Started – it is Liberty Baptist College back in the 80s and back in the late 70s. And it grew into Liberty University. And then when he died suddenly, Jerry Jr. took over that role. So it's going to be an interesting test of leadership to see what direction they go with selecting the new president of the university.
We could speculate. I don't think we're going to do that tonight about when, who the next president will be or how long the search will take place. This is a new and uncharted territory for Liberty University. And I think that it needs to be said that, we need to be praying for Liberty. We need to pray for Jerry Falwell and his family. There is grace under the cross of Christ for Jerry Falwell. If he repents of his sins and believes in the Lord Jesus Christ, there's grace for his wife and for this other gentleman that's been involved in this, relationship that they've had together, and that should be the hope and desire for all of us that Jerry would come to know Christ. And so I know I've committed myself to pray for him, and I think we all should do that and hope that he can see the error of his ways and some humility. Alan, I thought you had something to say. All right. Well, guys, anything else you want to say regarding this, the story or anything like that?
In the discussions I've seen, these are usually difficult discussions when they do come up, when you have a public figure like this who is associated with a Christian university or who claims Christianity or or what have you. And I think it's important to note that you can be happy about the change, happy that Jerry Jr. is no longer in that role. And you can rejoice in that without rejoicing in the man's fall. And I think that's an important distinction to make, because we shouldn't be rejoicing when someone falls in sin.
Most definitely.
Well, Alan, you had mentioned, we've been thinking about COVID and the different things going on with that. JR, I know your church is doing some stuff with COVID, right? Aren't y'all opening up or allowing Wi-Fi for the school system? I think, Alan, you guys are doing that too.
So we've actually got a group that is called Rise Iredell, being the county, that is allowing a number of students on their days off to their virtual learning days to come to Front Street. They're going to be using the three floors of our educational building to spread out. And they're going to have teachers and teachers' assistants to help these students as they do their virtual learning and their homework and those types of things. So it'll be a all day long program, 5 days a week, split between when those students are virtual, so that they have that instruction. So that's a organization that we've partnered with. Looking forward to that. Our beloved governor threw a wrench in that last week when he said that any organization or anything offering tutoring for more than four students that weren't in a family has to meet the requirements of a daycare. So even if a couple families come together and hire a teacher to help their kids, with the difficult time, then wherever they're meeting would have to meet the requirements, much less a larger organization like the one we're partnering with. So a lot of inspections and some updating going on in our education building to meet that requirement. That's kind of, because you think about like the YMCA and some of these other organizations that have offered similar services to students, they've all had to shut down until they can try to meet this requirement that the governor just passed by executive order last week and it kind of announced out of the blue. So it's made things a little interesting, but Lord willing, we'll still be able to go forward with this and help these students, particularly the students in the neighborhood around the church.
Yeah, we've got free Wi-Fi at our church for students, which I think is helpful. Anything your church can do to help right now can be a good witness and a good service to the community, a good way to love your neighbors, as we're commanded to do. So many of our schools are having to back up and punt, as I've been putting it. Many of our public universities here in North Carolina started, and about the time they opened back up, they've had to close, and school systems are doing the same, and I think we'll see more of it as time goes on. And so there may be opportunity for us to fill the gap and serve as our churches to serve our communities.
Our school district is offering free hotspots, computers, and stuff like that to kids. So we haven't had that need. They were supposed to start school September 8th. They're starting school September 28th now, and the local middle school is going to have 400 students come. And so we just call the school and say, hey, can we put together prepackaged gift baskets for the kids, 400 of them, for you to give out the first day of school. And so we're going to do that as a way to level them and support them. But, yeah. Seminaries are starting back up. Alan, JR, how long do you think the seminaries are going to last until they potentially get shut down? And I say that because University of Alabama, my alma mater, has skyrocketed in cases. North Carolina State University, I saw, sent students to student housing home today, and they're beginning, I think, a remote education. So campuses are closed. And do you think the seminaries are going to withstand this, or do you think that they're going to have to move to online-only education?
I mean, yeah, pretty much all the University of North Carolina system and related schools have had similar issues. With the seminaries, it's a smaller population that might help them, but they're still in these large metro areas. So I don't know. We'll just have to see. I think it'll be difficult for there not to be some sort of spike in cases. just kind of given their locations and everything else around it. But I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's inevitable that some of our seminaries are going to have to do something different, continue with remote learning, online learning. I tell you, the one school I think will do the best with it would probably be Gateway Seminary of the Southern Baptist Convention, because of being a smaller school and also being spread out. Their extension campuses are incredibly important. I know all our seminaries have extension campuses, but I keep wanting to say Golden Gate, but Gateway, their extension campuses, I think, might be of great benefit to them. You know, Southeastern's in the Raleigh-Durham area, Southwestern, Dallas-Fort Worth, Kansas City, Missouri, New Orleans, which New Orleans getting ready to be dealing with Hurricane Laura. It's going to be hard to see things continuing like normal.
Given the restrictions that California has in place, does anybody know, has Golden Gate actually gone back to on-campus instruction? Anybody know that for sure?
I do not know.
I believe that universities in California have opened back up, I think. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, I just knew as a state they've had some of the strictest restrictions and ongoing restrictions, so I wasn't sure.
Well, I'm not going to speculate too much, but if they make it to October, I'll be kind of surprised. I hope they do. But the good thing about our seminaries is that they are already very well prepared to do online education, because all of our seminaries do online education already. It's very robust, and so if they have to shift online, they'll be able to do that. So that's the good news. Moving to our Southern culture topic, we're keeping the theme with tomatoes or tomatas or tomaters or maters, whatever you call them. And we're talking about tomato pie tonight. And JR, you made some tomato pie over the weekend. Why don't you share a little bit about that? If you're willing to maybe give your recipe, why don't you bless our listeners with that?
Sure. So we talked a lot about tomatoes the last number of episodes. It's a popular topic this time of year in the South. Most of us garden, and even if you don't really garden, a lot of people will have, you know, some tomatoes and some tomato plants in containers or what have you. So this time of year, that's everybody's trying to find things to do with tomatoes. I made a tomato pie. I guess that was Tuesday night. I don't remember now. Monday night, I think. But something that my mom used to make, so unfortunately I wasn't able to find her recipe, but I did find one online for a tomato and spinach pie. It's pretty straightforward. You start your crust off in the oven and put a little salt on your tomatoes after you slice them to start drawing some of the extra moisture out, just so it doesn't get soggy. While that's sitting, you saute some onions and some spinach with salt, pepper, crushed red pepper for a little bit of heat, and then mix together some Duke's mayonnaise and mozzarella cheese with a little bit of Texas Pete, and basically the layering looks like pie crust. What I did was pie crust, layer of tomatoes, the spinach mixture, the cheese mixture, and then a layer of tomatoes on top, and then bake that for like 45 minutes, so till it's nice and brown on top. And it's absolutely delicious. A great way to enjoy the vegetables you're getting out of your garden this time of year, spinach and tomatoes. So, Alan, do you have a preferred recipe for tomato pie? What do you think about tomato pie?
Well, I've consumed it a number of times. I've never actually made one personally. I probably should. I used to work at a Christian bookstore that also had a cafe. It was called the Table Talk Cafe, named after Martin Luther's Table Talk. It was an awesome bookstore. It had some great books there. And in that cafe, they made a homemade tomato pie, and I would get a slice of it from time to time. And I just loved it. Occasionally, they show up at church functions that I've been to. I sent you and Cornut both a link to a Duke's mayonnaise pie recipe. They're always big proponents of tomatoes in the summer. Duke's is because of tomato sandwiches, but also because of using Duke's mayonnaise in tomato pies. I love them. It's something I don't get very often, but it's a great way to use those extra garden tomatoes that you have. I really enjoy them. But I have a question. With many foods, they can be served three ways: a cold, room temperature, or heated. How do you like your tomato pie? Do you like it cold or do you like it heated?
Probably room temperature. It's actually, I would say it's good any one of those three ways. But when I made it the other night, Hannah was helping out with a student event at the church, so it sat on the counter for about an hour or so while I did some canning until she got home. And so it was nice and room temperature. Gives it a good time to kind of set up. And that way, when you try to pull a slice out, it doesn't just kind of fall apart on you. So I think room temperature is a good one, but it's good about any way you have it.
We're overrun with tomatoes from our garden, so maybe that's something that I never made one before. And so maybe I'll make one. Had them before. Room temperature, I think, probably is a really good way to do it, or slightly warm. I don't think I necessarily like it cold.
It makes it a great potluck dish because, I mean, you can – you know, if once your church is able to have potlucks again, if you can get your hands on some nice fresh tomatoes, it's a good option for that because it can, you know, go on the table with a potluck and it doesn't have to be piping hot or ice cold and it's still delicious.
I agree. I think room temperature is definitely best. I've eaten it cold, I've eaten it warm, but just sitting there, like you said, it's a great potluck dish. Anything that you can fix and it can sit there without causing foodborne illness and still taste good is good by me.
Excellent. JR, why don't you tell everybody how they can stay in touch with us?
You can connect with us on Facebook, facebook.com/potluckpodcast SBC. You can connect with us on Twitter @potluckpodcast_, Instagram @potluckpodcast SBC. You can email us potluckpodcast@gmail.com. We always love to hear from our listeners. Reach out to us. Tell us topics, whether related to the SBC or related to Southern culture that you'd like to hear us talk about. We always love to talk about topics from our listeners. And if you're listening to this, especially if you listen to this on an Apple device, rate us on the iTunes store. That's a great way to help people find the podcast. And go ahead and whatever device you're listening on, go ahead and share this with one person that you think would enjoy it. We greatly appreciate it.
Share the podcast, share your tomato pie, and come every week to the potluck to have your fill, to have your full, and join us next time. Same Baptist time, same Baptist hour, and stay Baptist, my friends.